Sunday, December the 12th, the end of an idyll. What a perfect, glorious, golden blue day. Lyndon Early decided to skip church, a decision I in no way contested. We piled into the Bronco, Lyndon and I and Arthur and Matilda and Jesse, for a last farewell tour around the dance place and the Martin. Numerous conversations with Dale to inquire where every shredder and seeder and tractor and employee was. Directions to get the foundered bulls moved off the place so only our best merchandise will show. I jumped out at the first tank to find that the blue bonnets are really coming up thick along the embankment. Lyndon beams at all the work that's been done, but ceaselessly finds another field that ought to be shredded or seeded, or a shed painted our new green, which incidentally is sprouting across the landscape, or washes that ought to be filled in. I know the ranch force will greet the convening of Congress and our return with a sigh of relief. Oka has been spending his days down here getting some really artistic shots for his own story of a president's country from sunset on the Pernalis, that view I always love so much from our yard, to the humble farm lantern hangs on the back porch of the old Sam Johnson house. Just things that bespeak the country and its way of life. The day was so beautiful, we're going to have lunch at the lake, so we helicoptered over about 1, stopping to pick up A.W., and landed at what Lyndon called Mount Matilda, where the Crims are going to build a house. Right now it's a rocky hill, topped by a windmill, and dotted with mesquite and persimmon, cat's claw cactus. And nice to look forward to the time when we'll really live here and have such neighbors and perhaps more. For the first time, I am these last few months assured that Lyndon can retire. Now, if we can only stay well and strong and do a good job until we can honorably buy our ticket home. We had lunch in the brick-paved patio. The sky was cloudless and the temperature in the 70s. In Florida or Palm Springs, it would be hard put to do better than the hill country today. The most delicious charcoal broiled hamburgers, the smell as good as the taste, with pinto beans and all the trimmings, and a cup custard as good as Zephyr ever made. Mary is definitely learning. They are a wonderful couple. Lyndon has spent these last few days talking ranches and cattle and business with A.W. just as though he were going to put everything on ice for months, as indeed he is, because when we return in January, our chance to live this sort of life is practically ended for an indefinite period, perhaps a weekend now and then. There's a happy, sad feel to the day. Like even the Secret Service will be a little sorry to go back. Lyndon, who sometimes growls at the number of them that attend him when he sees 5 or 6 riding along in a car, talks about the Mexican generals, was in a fond and joking mood with them. He regards Clarence as head of the country boy detail. He is indispensable, knows how to find our way to the most remote pasture, how to gut a deer, and how to get out of a mud hole. After lunch, Lyndon was going boat riding, but I wanted to drive into town to have an hour with Linda and a hairdo before dinner at the governor's. So I left him with the Crims and the Morsons. Bill Moyers and I drove in along one of the pleasantest roads in Texas. Because now something else is emerging. Stars in her eyes and bells in her voice. I believe she feels, at 21, like I did when I was 17, and like Lucy apparently has most of her young gay life. It's a joy to me to see her happy and excited. I had a good visit with her, and Dolly dressed my hair, and I put on my beautiful white satin Polly Parnas ensemble. I was ready when Lyndon came by. About 6:20. Linda has made a happy transition from her big comfortable room at the White House to sharing a small one, size of her bathroom, with two other girls, and a tiny closet. She's not bedeviled by the need of things. On the other hand, I want her to enjoy things. Clothes, elegant place to dine and dance, a plane trip to Acapulco. I believe she can handle them, and not they rule her. Took the Krems and Ovita with us to dinner at the mansion. This was something I had been looking forward to lovingly. First, because it was John and Nellie, and at the mansion, a place I had long wanted them to be, and they're filling it with grace and good work. And second, I knew I would see a lot of old friends, and we did. Lloyd Benson's, the Merrill Connellys, Ann and Seaman Eastland, and June and Frank Irwin. Ian, John, and I found ourselves a seat on a sofa and had a quiet visit about the architect for the library. Apparently, it was a decision that the governor was supposed to be in on. Somebody has goofed. I never knew it. I simply outlined all the steps I had taken, the evaluation we had made, Harrison and Abramowitz, and Philip Johnson and Yamasaki, Paul Rudolph and Adolph Kahn, Bunshaft of Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill, emphasizing clearly that I was, none of us were really an authority on the architect, and there was no prototype to follow. John and Frank were interested and agreeable. It was bad planning not to have called in the governor on it sooner. And the Zach Lentzes were there. I hadn't seen them in ages. Dale and Jean Locke, and Nancy and Alfred Negley. She told me my Christmas tree would be delivered on Tuesday, and the John Pieces of San Antonio, and Harry and Francis Province, and the Joe Sheehys of Tyler, others with whom John had worked on Lyndon's campaigns since he, John, first came with us back in about 38 or 39. It was a delightful evening. The mansion was beautiful. I was so proud to have the Krems meet John and Nellie and all our friends. Young Johnny is taller than his daddy and bigger. And Mark is still an adorable youngster. And Sherry B., much like Nellie. There were no speeches, but nevertheless, it was an evening when nostalgia was just below the surface. I thought of all the years we'd worked together, with aims quite unspoken. Or did the seeds of today lie somewhere in our consciousness? And here was John in the governor's mansion, and Lyndon, president. It was a great day. We left a little before 10, and were aboard Air Force One, headed for Washington, and I stretched out to sleep, and actually slept most of the way. We arrived at the White House door about 2, and now I was wide awake and read for an hour in bed, of all things, a little diary which I had kept in 29, 30, and 31, age 16, 17, and 18, and which had remained at the brick house in a cedar chest, and had been sent to me with an unsigned note by some person who had dismantled Daddy's belongings in the old brick store. I squirm appropriately. Finally, Lennon came and crawled in bed with me at 3. We went to rest for the busy week that lies ahead.